Welcome to Pioneers vs. Pretenders. I'm your host, Joe Human, and I'm happy to be back, man. It's been 3 months of not recording, and I've listened to everyone's, like, cries, especially on Twitter. Y'all guys were having me. Look, I wouldn't say I've been busy. I guess I've just been really working, and I'm very intuitive with everything I do, so everything needs to feel right, and I'm happy to be back. You know, it feels really good. I'm chilling with someone very cool, someone very interesting. Known him for a very long time. He runs an amazing brand. And we're going to have a chill conversation. Like, he was chatting to me and telling me, dude, what are we going to talk about? Like, what are the questions? I'm like, there's no questions, Teppo. This is just a conversation between two creatives.
Hey, bro, like, before, I told you yesterday, bro, send me the questions so that, like, I don't mess this whole thing up.
It's fine. You can mess it up.
Can I swear?
Like, yeah, you can cuss, bro. You can definitely cuss. I mean,
my English is not that good, so, like,
that's all right.
I run out of words.
That's all right.
Okay, cool.
Teppo the Ginmaker is in the house. Well, we can call this a house.
It is a house, bro.
Cool.
Dude, like, today I was in church.
Uh-huh.
And so now that we've expanded our studio, I have to, like, give all the rooms within the space a name.
A name. And so what are you going to name them?
So for a very long time, like, my ethos or my drive was based on the first law which God gave unto man, which is create, multiply, and dominate. So the first dude, the first space in our home will be called the creation space. That's where you get in, you pick a fabric, pick your buttons, we measure you up, we create the pair of jeans with us. And this here, where we're sitting, is a multiplication studio, where we're basically going to multiply or create, or actually making the actual item from the creation to the multiplication. And the other space is a brand experience where we're going to have a bar, a nice studio, and you know, you can come chill with us while your jeans is getting made, you know, have a drink
that's
with
cool.
us, and that's a domination space.
How important is creating experiences for your customers when you're building a brand?
I think nothing is new under the sun. Nothing is new, nothing is different, dude. Like, we can't lie to anyone, Joe. You know,
true.
What you're doing, anyone can do it, basically. But, like, why do people have to go to Joe as opposed to Utando or whoever is out there making, who's a podcaster or who's a... What do you do, Joe?
Yeah. I do a lot of things. We'll get into
that. Who's a brand? Who's, you know, and a jean is a jean is a jean. We know that. Everybody can make a pair. Not everybody can make a pair of jeans, but, like, you can find a pair of jeans almost anywhere. But, like, what makes a Teppo jean quite different from the others, what separates us from the others, what's our value proposition. And I think for me, one thing that I've learned over the past couple of years is the fact that you have to create an experience. You know, experiences, that's what people live for. People live for moments, people live for experiences. When you get paid, the first thing that comes to mind, you just want to buy yourself an experience.
True.
Because you've been working so hard, so you just want to buy yourself that experience. So for me, I feel like a brand is a story well told, first and foremost, but also the experience that comes with it. Mm. You know, why does it make... I think the price has to make sense with the experience, too. You go to any premium brand, the experience that you get there, the fact that you can sit and have a conversation with the salespeople and understanding what the product is, who the product is, and why is the product being made, it's quite key. So when you're building a brand, the experience, I think, is one of the most important things that, like, put probably 15 or 40% to your price, you know, and that has been quite key. And the reason why I also selected Victoria Yards as a place where we house Teppo the Ginmaker, it's because of the experience that you find in this place. The neighborhood around is not quite the most nicest neighborhood. When you drive here, you're like, yo,
exactly.
What's happening, you know? And then when you
it's get, quite rough and
it's
grungy.
Quite rough and grungy and, you know, and scary sometimes to some people. But, like, when you get inside here, you kind of feel safe. It's a precinct. It's you know, it's you feel like you're outside of Joburg, but you're in Joburg, mm. and you feel a bit safe. You feel like you're at home, surrounded by different art makers, for instance. I'm forced to be very creative in here because I'm surrounded by a whole lot of winners. Mm. You know, I'm surrounded by a gallery that houses like quite expensive artists and like artists who've made it from all over around the world. And Aboyana Mabulu, Blessing Gubemi are here. There's a guy who borrows glass. There's a guy who works with leather, the ceramic person. And everybody is like on a world standard. Everyone is on a world level. You know, it's so for me, I'm kind of forced to create something that's different. And I'm always inspired. You know, mm. you leave the place, you walk outside, you see there's a garden, there's trees, you can breathe, you can think, you can have time to think. You know, and that's, I think, as a creative and as an entrepreneur, it's quite key not to be in a place where you are easily influenced by a whole lot of things, but like you're influenced by nature. Mm. And there's nothing that's most beautiful than to be inspired by nature. I don't know why what I'm saying. Like, I feel like I'm talking a lot. No, what's happening here, Joe?
It is really interesting just seeing you dive into your brand. But before we really get into that and sort of like how you've been building it and what really gets you ticking, we want to know about Utepo. Like, you know, there's people listening to this and they don't know who Utepo is. You know, what is your background, who you are, and how you sort of got into the retail space and you've been able to start creating something that you visualized and you, mm-hmm. like, you know, had an inception about. So I want to dive into that. Who is Utepo? Like, where are your origins? You know, where do you come from? How did you get into the space?
So Utepo is a young 27-year-something. 20-something year old dude.
You already said it.
And I think for me, like I'm a creative. I'm a fighter. I am a son to a very amazing woman. I am a grandchild to an amazing grand woman. Mm. And I was raised by a woman all my life. In 1998, my parents separated when we were staying in Davidson and we were forced to move in our grandmother's house. And I think, like, I was so, like, when my dad and my mom divorced, I think it was one of the worst things for me to ever experience because I was so close to this guy, you mm-hmm. know, and now all of a sudden he's gone. And, like, my whole world literally just changed. And I had to find myself in the world.
Did it change because of the influence your dad had on you?
It changed because, like, it didn't make sense. The world didn't make sense at all to me. It's like, you know, this guy was here and now he's gone. Like, no one is saying anything. You know, like, we had my granny's house. It's called Gunogula. You know, Gumnandi. But, like, where's like this guy? Yeah, where's this guy? You know, it didn't make sense for a very long time. And I think that led to me being a loner. Being my sister and I, like, we're very quite kind of close. And it led to us being, like, very loners. And people were stuck in our own corners, like, was very quiet when I was growing up, dude. Like, I'd disappear in a room. Huh. I'd disappear in school. I'd just disappear, you know. And that was me growing up, you know. And I think being raised by a strong woman who kind of wanted to build something in me. You know, my grandmother is a person who I think she's an anchor in my life. She's an anchor in my brand. She's an anchor in my creation. She's an anchor in the person that I kind of am today. You know, thinking about it today is that if it wasn't for influence, I wouldn't have been the man I am today. If it wasn't for her prayers as well, I wouldn't be the guy I am today. Okokwami always said to me, Utepo, you're a gentleman and always need to dress like one. She'd always be a person who's like, would encourage us, would pray for us, would sit with us and try as much as possible to make us feel at home. Mm. Try as much as possible to feel loved. Try as much as possible to make us forget about our reality. And my grand is a storyteller. And I think for a very long time, I was kind of, I really wanted to emulate her. I really wanted to copy her. Her ability to just jump on stage and speak to thousands of people and just captivate an audience with just stories. For me, that was like an unbelievable thing to see. And seeing how people get healed by just hearing stories. And for me, it was my first, it was one of the most powerful things. It was one of the most
it's one of those things that kind of taught me that if you want to be anything in this world, you have to be a public servant. That's me. First and foremost, I'm a public servant because I was raised by public servants.
Mm.
You know, my house, Endlini, Ikasi, our gates are always open. We never locked the house.
I don't know what that is like.
2 a.m. in the morning when Joe and his wife are fighting, you're going to call McGreza or you come at home.
Mm.
And McGreza has to step out, put in a face, and make sure she comes up to meet Joe's and try help Joe, you know, and listen to Joe. Sometimes it's like people just came to tell their stories and just to have somebody who was going to listen to them. And that's it. You know, so for me, I feel like that's my upbringing. That's my inspiration. That's where I got to learn a lot about myself growing up. I remember around to moting as a tea, I went koniva gash and like you'd spend like 20 minutes in the kitchen making the tea so that you can hear the stories, so that you can hear why this guy here. And like there's been different people that my granny has serves, you know, like from the very rich guy to a very poor person. And one thing that I really love is the fact that she was able to speak to everyone on the same level.
Mm.
She never had levels of people. And that's one thing that I kind of took from her, is that I can sit down with a billionaire, the same I can sit down with a guy who doesn't have a job, who lives on the street. And that's, I think, for anybody else as well. It's a skill that I have. And that has been translated to the brand, to my brand, which I've established today. Come from Ikasi, a small township in the far east of Johannesburg called Takane. That's the dingy, dangerous, a place of no hope. But I say it with pride because it's a place that gave birth to me.
Mm.
If I didn't have that background, I wouldn't have been here today. It gave me my story, you know.
Where was that shift, you know? Because I know for me, I mean, I always say that I was forced into entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when I had to drop out of school, at that time, entrepreneurship was not a conversation that people were having on the streets or you are having at home.
Yeah.
You know, we were so conditioned to having to go through school, get a degree, you know, get into corporate or find a job and then work your own life, right? And when I had to drop out, for me, that was the shift because I was like, shit, I'm on my own. Now I have to make it without, you know, having a degree. So for you, I mean, with the influence that your background and your city and your town gave you and your grandmother and your mom being there for you, when was that shift? Like, what happened for you to start visualizing this dream of building Temple the Dreammaker?
I think for me, like, I've always visualized it from a young age. The fact that my dad was gone, it was like, okay, cool, tell you on your own, nigga.
Mm.
You gotta be a man. But how do you do that? I'm only 8 years old. And so my mom was a domestic worker, so she earned $1,500 a month. And like, I was asking her, I had a conversation with her, I was like, yo, dude, like, how do you raise us on $1,500
rand? Mom's like, amazing, bro.
You know, cause like, $1,500, you know, on nothing.
True.
And I think for me, it started there because I saw my mom hustling so hard that she every morning she leaves the house at 4 a.m., comes back at 6, 7, 8, every day, consistently. Sometimes she'd get at home like about 10, 11, 12 because trains were not working. And so that was that's for me was like that first, that was the first entry, that was the shift in my life that I really had to do something, I really had to create something. I remember in grade four, I my mom gave me $30, went to a party shop and bought a pack of sweets and my breads. And I bought like one pack and from there, cause one guy my look care. So I bought that pack, started selling sweets in class, the business grew. Real quick, you know, I was selling every day after school. I'd go out, buy another pack, started buying 2 packs. You know, the business was growing, man. And I started having money on my own. But it grew so fast that, like, I got bankrupt real quick, you know.
How?
Because I was giving away, like, stuff on credit.
You know, like, like I won't Bali, I won't Bali, so I'll come to you.
It's always the Bali and the Bali, you know,
and you give it to them and then people don't pay you, and there's still people who still owe me till today. I still have the list. But I think for me, the spirit of hustling started from there, is that I had to sell something in order to make something. And stay at my granny's house. We're not also given money.
Do you think that's a flaw that we as young people have? Because a lot of us are dependent on being given shit. We don't think and we don't perceive that, hey, actually for me to be in a specific space, I actually need to put the freaking work in.
Yeah. I think also like entrepreneurship, it comes from, you can't be an entrepreneur if you're not angry. Entrepreneurs are born from anger.
True.
You know? So for me, like growing up, I've always wanted to fill up the fridge. That was the biggest dream. And it was with all my peers. There's Ultramel, there's Coke, there's, you're a kid, it must be nice, you know? And so that was the dream, dude. It's like, and how do you do it? You know, and when you watch on TV, the guys who are doing it are entrepreneurs. The guy who made a pen, sold it, or bought a pack of pen, sold them, bought 10, and then grew. So for me, it was always that I was inspired by those kind of stories because they made much more sense to me. And those are stories that because I was so exposed to people coming to my granny's house, like amakinta, like gangsters, to average dudes who are still starting out. So I was exposed to the entrepreneurship world almost on a daily basis, you know, because my gran was forced to have conversations with these people consistently. My granddad, who I hardly talk about, he was a construction worker, you know, and my granny was always home, and umkulam was always out. So he'd come back, make 100,000 from this one job, bring in the money, give it to my gran, and then my gran distributes the funds. And that's how my granddad, that's how the family survived. Because we know he's going to make 100,000 for the next 6 months, he's out of work. You know, and he's still hustling. So it's I've always seen that. It's always been close to me. But the shift, it came when I went to AFDA and to study film. And I realized that I'm in the wrong class and I have to study fashion design because I love fashion so much. I went to study fashion. Couldn't complete because due to financial...
Just pause there. How does one understand that I'm actually in the wrong space and this is really my passion?
Everything around you says it.
Because a lot of us have different skills and stuff. Like, I mean, I can play the piano, I can dance, I can do so many things, but I'm in a specific industry, I'm in design.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot happened for me to find that space. But for you, like, what was it? What was the process in realizing, hey, this is actually where I need to be?
The process was, I always found myself at fashion weeks. I always found myself googling fashion, the latest fashion, the latest fabrics. I don't know, I'm studying filmmaking, dog. I'm supposed to be watching movies. I am not. I'm just busy with fashion. And everybody around me was just saying, dude, you're not supposed to be here. You know, and everything around you says it. You know, I go to school, I drag my feet. I don't want to wake up in the morning. Fuck, what's David Lally doing now? You know, so that's basically what was happening in my life. That's when I realized I'm in the wrong space. And luckily, I was surrounded by people who were, I was surrounded by the right support structure from a friendship perspective. I had friends who were like, dude, just do you, bro. Like, we all can see, Boguti, you don't want to be there. Just go do you. So I left that, went to study fashion design. And I think for me, because I couldn't complete my studies, but it was one of the biggest blessings in my world, in my life. It changed my life completely. As much as I struggled for a very long time, but it gave me, I kind of learned who I am. I learned my character. I got to learn who I am as a person. I get to learn who I am as an entrepreneur. I get to learn who I am as a community member, as a public servant. I got to understand what my purpose is in life. I got to be to a point where I got to realize my potential. What's my potential? What's my purpose in life? I think without purpose, nothing and life makes sense. If you wake up in the morning and you have no purpose, life is not worth living.
That it's very tricky to not be able to question why you do what you do. I think for me also purpose has been the back to the drawing board type of thing. You know, it's the foundation to everything.
Purpose is everything, man. Like it's what business people call it, vision. You know, and I think for me, like, in, I was raised as a public servant, and that's what I always wanted to do, is how do I impact someone's life? How do I grow people? How do I make sure, how do I create careers? How do I give people jobs? That's my purpose. Like, I have to serve the public, and everything around you here now, it's built by that. It's built on that foundation of serving the community. What I love about Victoria's is that the ethos or the values is, you can't be here if you're not growing the community around. It looks like it is a fucked up community. If you look around, people live by 10 in Linengaga, in Nani, and that's what's happening in the neighborhood. And the visionaries or the guys who are developing the space came together and said, how do we build a premium space, but which is inclusive, which also makes the people from around the area eat and not scare them away or start creating a mini center? You know, how do you build that? And it's just by finding the right brands, finding the right entrepreneurs with the same mentality, who understand or who have the same drive. And that's how I ended here. And most of my employees, 90% of my employees, they walk to work. You know?
That's dope.
It's my petty stress engine. They come here. It's open for them. They love it. Like some of the guys don't want to even go home. They just want to stay here and like be busy. You know? And for me, like, that's me living my purpose. And me being very honest and true to myself and to my purpose and listening to my purpose has given me the opportunity to grow a brand that a whole lot of people can associate themselves with. When I started 3, 4, 5 years ago, it didn't make sense to a whole lot of people. But you're going to put your name on jeans? It didn't make sense, but I had a vision. I saw it, you know, and once you see it, then you start doing it. You start acting. I mean, for me, I've already seen the end. I know what the end is looking like. You know, so I'm in a process, and the end is a beautiful place. Christians call it heaven.
That's really key. So key. You know, a lot of the stuff you've been saying has been resonating with me, because I tweeted, I'm done in 2020.
I'm done.
And people were like, dude, kanjani. Like, we know the end from the beginning. You know, and it's about having vision and having purpose. We were having a chat offline just now, and we were chatting about how we've both built our businesses from social media. And now we're trying to bring it back into reality. You know, how have you used the digital space to actually storytell and grow your narrative and to speak to the right people to relate to your brand?
Excuse me. I think for me, like, it has been a mix of two things. You know, social media, it's free marketing first and foremost. Is you can put out anything you want. You have, whatever you do, it has to be done by intention. You know, if you're using it to make money, you need to communicate that to people and start creating a following. And the nice thing is, we're living in a world of hashtags. So with just a hashtag, anyone from around the world can find me. You know, if I hashtag jeans, anyone around the world is going to find me. You know, and that's the most beautiful thing about the digital world, that it gives you a platform to create and find people who like the same things as you. And that's how I've used social media, just to communicate what I do, how I do it, why I do it, and hopefully someday this thing is going to grow. And slowly but surely it grew. You know, it grew to place to even like to people that I've never ever thought in my life I'll have connections with. You know, sometimes I look back, like when I'm sitting alone, I'm like, yo, you know, like I've hosted so many wealthy people. I've hosted so many famous people. I've hosted so many. These are things that I've only dreamt of. And through the power of social media, and that's how I've grown the brand. Bring it to the real world was me finding a base, me finding the base that speaks to what I'm trying to build, you know. And this base is the best base I've ever found. The brand wouldn't make sense if I put it in a sentence. It had to be in a space where it feels real. You know, when you drive here, you understand. I'm in the real world right now. Anything can happen, you know. But like when you get in here, it's like, whoa, it's beautiful. It's a discovery. You discover this brand. You know, for so many people, they've discovered the brand through this area. And that's how I started bringing the brand from just being on the social platforms to the real world. It's hard. You know, it's how do you translate what you've created online to...
I mean, it looks beautiful. It looks dreamy.
It looks dreamy, yeah, you know. Pictures lie, though. Until you have to bring it to reality, it's something else. And managing reality, overheads, employees, salaries, all of that.
And it's social execution.
Execution, dog. Social media is easy, dog.
It's very easy.
It's easy. Like, I'm shooting to my edits, I 20. It looks like I'm done. I look good.
How have you dealt with... with influence, you know, because look, we start businesses, they blow up, you know, people jump onto them. I mean, you're just saying you've hosted famous people, you've hosted wealthy people, and this is all different types of influence, right? And if I look at your social media numbers, they're quite high, you know, those are people that are constantly have eyes on your brand. How have you dealt with that? Because a lot of us, I mean, we know when we started.
Yeah.
A lot of us got into the space. Our social media numbers grow. We became influencers in inverted commas. And we lost the plot because the fame was now the...
The drive.
Yeah.
So for me,
know,
like...
How have you dealt with that?
I think for me, dude, like it's always been about the bottom line, you know. It's always been about the purpose and the vision. And once you start losing sight of that, if you didn't have one, then all of these things, the fame, the money, the girls, the whatever, it's gonna take you away. It's easy, you know. And especially when you become a public in the public eye, people wanna know what you do on a daily basis, and it's up to you what you communicate to people. You know, you wanna give them everything, or you just wanna give them what they have to know. That's it. So for me, it's not a thing. Honestly, it is really not a thing. For me, it's just my biggest thing is that I want to build the biggest denim brand in Africa that's going to be sold all over around the world.
How have you leveraged that?
How have I?
Because another thing is leveraging. A lot of us have the influence and the numbers, but not everyone is making money from it. Not everyone is being able to
actually use that
and put it into their brands and convert that into sales.
It's intention, dude. It's intention. So the biggest thing is also that, like, now that we're on social media, there's people everywhere. You know, if you do a TV interview, get seen by millions of people. But how do you convert those people? So if you're not accessible, it makes it a problem. Not everybody is on social media. People need to come and see a product. I deal with a product that you have to feel and touch and wear and feel and try on and see which okay sharp and tepos kintotaka, you know. So it's accessibility. That's also really key. Visibility is extremely key. I was having a chat with David Lale. He's like, dude, I hope you're getting a store soon. I'm like, I'm going to get a store, but like at the moment I need to build a brand to a level where I feel, you know, I don't want to be dictated by people who see me and think this. I have to build it to a level where I feel like, okay, shop, I am ready to take on a shop in Sandton City because I can afford R1,000 a square meter. So right now I'm learning with this place. I'm learning how to deal with overheads. I'm learning how to deal with salaries. I'm learning how to deal with months that we didn't make money. How do you pay rent? How do you pay salaries?
How do you deal with those
how
months?
How do you survive with those?
How do you deal with those months? Because, like, I keep saying this. Entrepreneurship is so, like, fucking romanticized. Yeah. Like, we make it look so beautiful and dreamy. I mean, if you had to go on my social media right now, you think this guy's living his best life, right? But behind the scenes, there's sleepless nights. There is, you know, having to pay suppliers, having to pay employees, you know, having not to take a salary home because you want to make sure that the guy at the studio
come back.
Dude, right?
I have to come back next week.
Yeah. How have you dealt with the challenges and the difficult times in your business?
I live by faith, eh?
That's powerful.
And like bad months too, like everyone with Yangs or Pella and we haven't made money, and then there comes a huge order. Boom. And it pays everything. You know? And that's how the brand started. I didn't start with capital. I didn't start with a lot of money in my pocket.
Did anyone of us start with capital?
Some did, dude. Some people
lucky
do. Lucky people do start with capital. But like, you know, for me, it was, I didn't start with capital, with a lot of money. I started with what I had. And I had to grow that. And when I grew that, I realized that, okay, shop, I need to expand myself. I need to multiply myself. So I need to find someone who can handle the communication side as I go chase. But how I handle with it, dude, like it's over the years we've managed to create a fan base, we've managed to create a client base, we have a customer base as well, and we know there's clients that we service on a monthly basis that make sure we get paid, and we have 2 months covered, 6 months covered. So those are the things that have helped us at the back. It's like also Tepo picking up the phone. You know, it's okay, Sharp. I can see month end is looking very dry. I need to call people now. You know, so I pick up calls and I pick up the phone and I call people. Aren't you interested in this? Aren't you interested in this? Aren't you interested in this? In a day, there was a month, dude, month end, May 29, 4 months ago, sitting, I'm like, Agunanyugu. The only thing I had was that airtime I bought for like $1,000. I don't know why I did that. But I invested. Then I started going on social media, DM'd everyone who was sending me messages. Within that day, I managed to make 50,000 from social media. People like, okay, Sharp, send an invoice, boom. Send an invoice, boom. Send an invoice, boom. People paid. So it's me using my resources, also acting fast. You know, seeing it, which, okay, it's going to get dry. So I need to create I need to do something to make sure there's money coming in. Because no one is going to give you money at the end of the day. So that's how I've dealt with it. You know, also I have personal relationships with my clients. Relationships are everything, dude. Like,
true.
They are everything. Network is everything, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, you can have money today and tomorrow you're broke. But when you have the right people on your network, umnandi, boy. Mm-hmm. Like, uzoba mnandi, Joe. Like, trust me, you know. And that has worked for me for a very long time. And I'm sincere with people. You know, sometimes, you know, as people, we make mistakes. But like, it's also like people know who I am, what I represent. I represent one thing all the time. I don't have 10 different voices. I am one thing. I make jeans, and that's all I do for a living. And that has kind of opened doors for me in places that I'd never imagined.
How important is it for Africans and just creatives, or let me just say African industrialists to exist, you know, like what role do you see people like you playing?
Hey man, I feel like people like us play a very, very, very important role in the society. Dude, like me having to create 8 jobs, it's a very, very, very important role that I'm playing in the society. If the brand didn't exist, these guys would probably be out there stranded on not having money or, you know, doing things that they don't want to do. So it's really important for us to create industries, because the pie is huge. There's 58 million people in South Africa. There's always someone looking for something. There's always someone looking for something that you have. And that's one thing that I've learned. And also we're living in a country where leadership, our leaders, especially from a political side, is we don't know where they stand. We don't know what they're fighting for. We don't know what... There's no strong vision for me, personally, you know. And as a private sector, I'd call myself a private sector. As a private sector, that's our role to play. We are government. basically. The government won't create these things.
True.
The government won't go out there and say, hey, we need a denim factory. They won't do that. So we need to kind of start all these things. And then they'll see. If they see, they see it. If they don't, it's okay. You know, but we need to be the change in this country. Because our country is in shambles, dude. It's in shambles. And if we need to exist, people like us need to exist. People need to start creating more things. And eventually, we're going to get to a point where we are strong. Rome wasn't built in 7 days. I think that's what people say. And even our country is not going to be built in 7 days. But we need guys like ourselves who want to just service a small portion of people and to grow this community that we're living in, to also add up on the economy. And eventually, like, you never know, we're probably going to become one of the biggest industries in the world, you know?
Tepo, it's been an awesome chat. Thank you for doing this, bro. It's been really interesting hosting you.
Really? Is it done?
It's been great. Yeah, we're done, bro.
Oh, wow. That we was so done. Quick, bro.
We're done.
I wanted to send shout-outs.
You can definitely send shout-out to your mom, your grandma. But yeah, man, thank you so much for the insight.
Thanks for having
me,
bro.
Really, like, I think you know this very well. I mean, we were so close. We still are close, but like, I mean, physically close. We were always together, like yeah. Me, you, Skinny Spoo, you know, Elliot, and we were having the time of our lives.
And that
you
was
know,
dangerous.
When we started off, yeah. We were just, I don't know what we were doing,
yeah, but we were doing it.
As we separated, you know, everyone sort of got into their corner and started building, you yeah. know, and started being purposeful.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful to watch.
You know what's the most beautiful thing, dude? It's, if Joe can do it, I can do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, Joe, I'm going to slow Joe.
Yeah, hey, never know. Hey, there's hey. A healthy competition.
There's
right?
a healthy competition with, yo, Joe is he's killing it. I don't know what Joe is going through, but Joe is killing it, you know? And it's I think for me also, it's one of the most beautiful things that to ever watch you guys grow.
Mm.
It's amazing. I can't see my growth, honestly. And
that's the thing. I can't see my growth either.
Yeah. But like, it's there.
It's there. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful to watch.
Thank you, bro.
So when I'm out here, shut up, boy.